Blog Talk Radio. Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. On Wednesdays, join us as we explore heart health and homeopathy, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brooks and Dr. Adil Chinsalwala, MD homeopath specializing in cardiology. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Brooks, founder of Homeopathy World Community. This is an exciting day, September 14th, 2011. We're supposed to beginning our brand new show with co-host Dr. Adil, MD, who is a fourth-generation homeopath. That adds up to 105 years of homeopathic medical practice. And in our future shows, we would love to receive your questions so that Dr. Adil can directly answer your questions. I'm going to give an introduction about Dr. Adil, Blog Talk Radio, Homeopathy World Community, where you can log in and chat right there, comment and ask questions, be a participant in the show live. At the moment, I am in the back studio and Dr. Adil has not yet called in, so he may be having trouble getting a connection. If you are from India, you know that very often the internet is not a stable commodity. But I would like to just introduce him so that people can become familiar with his expertise. Dr. Adil, MD, belongs to the fourth generation of the reputed family of the Chinsalwalas, who have always been devoted to the service of homeopathy for over 105 years. Practically every facet of the homeopathic system, including the professional practice, developing clinics and hospitals, homeopathic research, the academics, even the business and manufacturing aspects of homeopathy, and of course, spreading waves of awareness, getting out in the community and talking about homeopathy are all integral parts of his entire family. Today, he says, in central India, the name Chinsalwala is synonymous with homeopathy. Dr. Adil has received his MBBS from Nagpur University, his Diplomat of National Board of Examinations in Internal Medicine in New Delhi, and Govern Medical College and the hospital at Nagpur. He has received his MD, DKMM, at the Homeopathic Medical College, and he will have to help me with pronouncing some of the Indian names, Babasaheb Ambedkar Marathwada University in Aurangabad. He completed numerous residency programs, including the PG Institute and Super Specialty Hospital in Nagpur, from 1999 to 2003, and he has been conducting many workshops since 1999. He also speaks extensively to professionals and lay people and is involved in many community activities. There are so many, I can't even list them all. He sent me pages in his bio. Dr. Adil is an accomplished author of books and numerous journal articles on a variety of medical topics, and he has been part of research studies, such as supervising one on the scope and limitations of homeopathy in cardiological disorders. That was a 10-year clinical statistical research from 2004. And another, which is reproving homeopathic drugs. And if you're a homeopath, you might be familiar with ferula sumbul, spigelia, gelsimium, glonine, carbonium sulfuricum, stannum italicum, tobacum, and even osteoarthritic nosode and aconitum ferox. And we really do look forward to learning from him about his interest in rheumatic heart fever, sickle cell anemia, congenital heart disease, chronic renal failure, and osteoporosis, among many other diseases. He will be opening his new website in the future, homeoacad.org. When you go to the website, you will be greeted with his words, "We have only one life, so why not live it in its healthiest way?" Anyone is out there and does have questions about using homeopathy for diseases such as diabetes, high blood pressure, and heart attacks, these are special concerns, not only for people in the United States and all around the world, but especially for the folks in India, where these are at exponentially increasing rates. Over the last decade, they have really increased. And we also know that tobacco is the most important preventable cause of premature disability and death, and is responsible for a myriad of harmful effects. There are currently 250 million tobacco users, I believe, and every year 800,000 to 900,000 Indians die due to tobacco use. So probably part of his educational programs, and I know that he mentioned to me, he does complete education for his patients, not only with how to take care of their heart and take his medications, but also spirituality or meditation, ways to reduce stress, which is why I do a Sunday night meditation show on Blog Talk Radio, Homeopathy World Community. And also how he gives people nutritional plans and other means of healing their heart and reducing stress, because that really puts a lot of pressure on them. I was reading that the Hindu priest Panditji is not overweight and does not smoke or drink and follows a strict vegetarian diet, yet 3 years ago he was suddenly struck by a heart attack. Panditji is among a growing number of Indians who are at risk of heart disease because of a genetic mutation that affects 1 in 25 people in India. That's incredible. The mutation almost guarantees the development of the disease, and Indians suffer heart attacks at an earlier age, often without prior symptoms or warning. And this is something that I've also been reading, that in India, both breast cancer and heart disease occurs ten years earlier than it does in other countries of the world. Now, researchers say in India, a country with more than 1 billion people, will likely account for 60% of heart disease patients worldwide. And that was written a couple of years back, and they were predicting that to occur. That was in 2009 that was stated, and so they were expecting that to occur by 2010. And perhaps Dr. Adel will be able to shed some light on the situation and why he has specialized. Heart disease in India is a really very large problem today, and I'm very interested in learning how the government approaches homeopathy and heart health and its patients, because they have integrated homeopathy into their system. This is really a new way of thinking, a new way of practicing medicine for those folks in other countries, especially in the United States. However, as we learned, Dr. Adel is part of four generations of Indians who practice homeopathy around the world. A study among Asian Indian men showed that half of all heart attacks in this population occur under the age of 50 years old and 25% under the age of 40. So it's probably quite anxiety-ridden in the thoughts of all the people in India, and yet I'm curious to know how it is that they smoke and they know that there's a connection between smoking tobacco and heart disease. And I would also like to learn if they chew tobacco also there. This information is according to the Indian organization Medwick Heart Foundation. And as I said before, the major causes of heart disease are tobacco use, physical inactivity, and an unhealthy diet often linked to the developed world. So in the country that traditionally frowns upon smoking and embraces the idea of a vegetarian diet, it was totally unexpected to find such a high percentage of heart disease. Researchers had long been aware that heart disease, which according to the World Health Organization, will kill almost 20 million people by 2015, and is exceptionally prevalent in the sub-Indian continent. But it is only recently that scientists discovered the gene responsible. So it sounds like in the field of genetics is how they're trying to target healing, whereas with homeopathy, we have a holistic approach. We look at the person's symptoms way before, years before any symptoms actually arise. And the research published in the Nature Genetics, Journal of Nature Genetics, explains how a genetic mutation affecting 4% of Indians and 1% of the world's population leads to a formation of an abnormal protein. And that's something that I indicated a little bit earlier. Even if you don't smoke or don't drink or follow a vegetarian diet, people are being struck with heart attacks. And this is a very probably frightening kind of prospect for those people living under this information. It is only recently that they discovered this gene and this protein. This protein often results in cardiomyopathy, a disease that causes deterioration of the heart muscle. Genetic mutations found within specific communities are nothing new. Yes, there has been a long talk of the Ashkenazi Jews and the Hispanic women, for example, being at a higher risk of developing breast cancer. Scientists in 2007 identified that a certain gene mutation was prevalent in both communities. However, most Indians don't know that they're carrying the disorder. That would be kind of, they would need to have genetic testing in order to know that, and obviously it's very costly to have genetic testing. Access to the facilities is not widely available, for one thing. Dr. Chaudhry, an Indian cardiologist, another Indian cardiologist, told CNN he is not sure whether testing would really help. And that's a really good thought, because if you know about this genetic disorder, how much difference will it make if you are aware of it? What changes can you make? I was just reading about changes in hormone levels dealing with testosterone in men, and that once they, thanks to Dr. Bob, who sent me this article from the New York Times today, that once they, when they're single, they have a higher level of this hormone, testosterone, and then once they have children, the level drops. So there, and it even drops much, much more when they help in the home, doing caring for the child, nurturing the family. Therefore, their conclusion states that based upon our activities, how we behave can change our hormone level. In the same way, we want to reduce cortisol, we want to reduce stress in the entire body, on the heart. Now, we're talking to India, and we're calling from America, and I was just reading a whole bunch of stuff. I don't know whether you were able to hear me.
No, I couldn't hear you, but now okay. I can hear you very clearly.
Oh, wonderful. Great. So I was talking about this Hindu priest, Panditjiti, who was not overweight. He didn't smoke. He didn't drink. He followed a strict vegetarian diet, and then he had a heart attack. And I was learning that the growing number of Indians who are at risk for heart disease, not just because of their lifestyle, but because of a genetic mutation that affects 1 in 25 people in India, is a very frightening prospect. And I'm wondering if you are dealing with this, are you taking care of people who have this problem?
Yeah. What happened was, when I went to medical school while doing post-graduation, we thought that heart attacks would occur only in people older than 60, 65, 70 years. But then what we found was the medical college ICCU, which was about 35 beds, 60% of cases were less than 40 years. So this young people, I mean young Indians suffering from ischemic heart disease. That was also my thesis topic for my MD medicine in allopathy. Now, what we found out was after 3 years of a good study that we Indians have got a genetic mutation, and although we are 70% pure vegetarians, in spite of it, we lead the world in diabetes, in ischemic heart disease, heart attacks, hypertension. I mean, the reason why we found out was homocysteine. Homocysteine is a protein that hyperhomocysteinemia is eventually one of the biggest reasons for Indians suffering from ischemic heart disease, although being pure vegetarians, although...
I'm not exactly sure, but he is talking about the problem with ischemic heart disease right now. And so you were saying the reasons for the Indians having ischemic heart disease is the homocysteine level? Yeah, this is the thing. You know what? Talking to the world community is we're close in one way, but then we're far apart in another way. It's maybe it talks about the world, how our heart rate goes. It we get a connection and then we lose the connection. You were saying that the homocysteine levels are high.
Yeah. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, I do. I'm so thrilled.
Well, so, yeah, I have attached another mic, that's why.
Okay.
Oh, anyway, so homocysteine levels are particularly high in Indians and particularly young Indians. Now, there is another genetic mutation, what we call as thrifty gene. What happened is, over the past many years, India has been a poor country. I mean... for a pretty long time, and the mutation was for people to consume less. Now,
okay.
In the past 2 decades, things have changed. India is now becoming quite a rich country. I mean, the middle Indians are nothing to do with poverty.
Nothing to do. He's probably going to tell us that their diet has changed and they're obviously, I believe I've read that their activity level has lessened. And since they're not working as hard and they're eating more.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Exactly. And secondly, because of the thrifty gene still present, so now the proportion of what we eat and what we expend out as in form of energy, that the proportion is distorted. And that is why more and more Indians are suffering from ischemic heart disease.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of a solution can you have? Because, I mean, the people are going to want to enjoy their food, eat more than they had over the previous generations, but they still have this gene, which is obviously going to affect.
Exactly.
Okay, so what can they do?
Now this is a basic difference between the modern medicine, that is allopathy, and homeopathy. When we see about, since I belong to both the classes, I have done my, I'm a cardiologist by modern medicine side as well. We, in modern medicine, we don't have medications for any genetic alterations. Whereas in homeopathy, when we see the person itself, the holistic approach, once you correct the miasmatic state and make it latent, the genetic expressions also reduce to a great extent. And that is how atherosclerosis is taken care of at the root level. And this is greatly achieved. I mean, the tendency to atherogenesis is greatly achieved once a constitutional drug is given to a patient. And then no more atherosclerotic events either in the heart or in the coronaries or in the brain or anywhere else take place. So this is a great breakthrough what we are achieving. And we have been collaborating with the Cardiology Society of India. And they too have approved. And nowadays I get patients from allopathic hospitals once their cardiac events are over.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like, Dr. Adel is, he has done his residency in internal medicine, in cardiology. He's a surgeon. He really has a great background. And now it sounds like he's collaborating with the other allopathic Western-type medicine hospitals that do not have any kind of a way to deal with a genetic mutation or the dramatic change in lifestyle that people in India have experienced over the last decade since they are becoming prosperous. We want to learn a little bit more, and I want to really understand, because the listeners may not understand, what is a miasmic latent?
Yeah. Now, see, whenever we speak of homeopathy, Hahnemann himself has mentioned there are two states, a vital force and an adverse force. A vital force is a force which governs the living economy, whether animal, whether human being, or any living economy is governed by a single vital force. All the functions are governed by a vital force. Now, this vital force can be corrupted by another force, which we call miasms. These miasms are of about four types: Sora, which is a functional miasm, and as this miasm evolves, there are many factors which can lead to miasmatic evolution. So as these factors, vaccination being one of them, as the miasm evolves, it can go into either a constructive pattern, which we call a psychotic miasm, or it can go into a destructive pattern, which we call as syphilitic miasm. Now, both psychotic and syphilitic miasms are organic miasms, and they produce different sets of disorders. More the person goes away from Sora towards psychosis or towards syphilis. Now, and please don't confuse those psychosis and syphilis with a disease psychosis or disease syphilis in allopathy. They are two, I mean, the terms may be used similar, but they are different as far as homeopathic aspect is concerned. So as the person progresses, evolves from Sora to syphilis or psychosis, the disorder, the pathogenesis, and the pathology deepens further, and cure becomes impossible when you reach the final stage of syphilis or psychosis. Now, the pattern in between Sora and psychosis is called tubercular miasm. Again, don't confuse it with tubercular disease, tuberculosis. Tubercular miasm. Now, this miasm, it is because of this corruption of this vital force that the entire problem takes place. And once the miasm, we have got in homeopathy anti-miasmatic remedies. So this miasm becomes latent, this dynamic force becomes latent, and that is how the entire disease, the entire pathology, the evolution comes at bay. And that is why we are able to control hypertension, atherosclerosis, syndrome X, that is diabetes, and such metabolic disorders, which is not possible with allopathy alone.
Maybe I think the listeners, especially those folks who are new to homeopathy, may want to understand a little bit more about how you decide at what point in development your patient is at. From the psychosis, syphilitic, tubercular, those are words, those are terminologies that homeopaths are familiar with, which is the corruption of the vital force which maintains the natural function of the human being. So how do you determine where they are in the progression of the pathology?
That's why homeopaths spend a lot of time taking history of a patient. Right from the evolution, right from birth, when a patient comes to me, right from his birth to the entire life history till today, I would ask, and the evolution, what sort of exciting factors miasms need to be, for evolution, it needs to be excited. Like a candle, you require to light a candle, and second, you require that the candle should be burning. So you require an exciting factor for the miasm to ignite, and a maintaining factor to continue the miasm to evolve. So if we have got an exciting factor, for example, an insult, a mental insult or a physical insult, a shock or a vaccination or an injury, or a surgery, however minor it may be, all these are exciting factors. Then stress, mental or physical, white collarship, frustrations, all these are maintaining factors. Now, if you're able to find these out, and then corrupt vital force will give out a specific set of symptoms, which in allopathy we name by a certain diagnosis or nosological diagnosis, but in homeopathy we collect all these symptoms, and then we can definitely put the patient in what sort of disorder he is. I mean, is he in still a psoric place, or he has evolved into a tubercular phase? Is he completely evolved in a psychotic phase or a syphilitic phase? For example, cancers, growing, unnatural growths, uncontrolled growths are psychosis. Ulcers, destructions, degenerations, gangrenes, they are syphilitic miasms. Both of these, excess growth and excess destruction, means incurability, and they are organic miasms. Rest of this tubercular miasm and functional miasms are sora. Functional miasms are easy to cure, and luckily, all homeopathic medicines work dynamically. I mean, right from aconite to zincomet, whatever, spigelia, they all have a dynamic action upon the vital force. And that corrupt vital force is corrected by the action of the remedy, and that's how we can achieve cure.
Okay, so I'm hearing two things. I'm hearing that obviously the vital force is very dynamic. It every moment it's changing. It's like the heart itself. It has a rhythm, and it's
the yin and yang, same as the yin and yang. Balance has to be maintained between the vital force and the miasm.
I'm also hearing that some people will come to you, and you might determine that they're incurable because their pathology has progressed to a state which is psychosis. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
Unnatural deposition of fat or cholesterol in the arteries is psychosis. I mean, if it's too much, then it's far advanced, then it may become incurable. But yes, the process can be cured. Homeopathy can cure processes, not the depositions per se.
Okay, so, I mean, even if a person has the deposition of fat, arterial sclerosis, can you provide for them a lifestyle change that might make them improve? Because I understand that with lungs, a person who has been smoking for a decade, even if they stop smoking, then the regression of the lungs to a better state of health can happen over the course of time, even rapidly. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's correct. Because lifestyle management is the key to control all these metabolic disorders, be it hypertension, be it diabetes, be it ischemic heart disease, all lifestyle, key lifestyle. Now, one of the two important things which one should understand is, as far as lifestyle is concerned, apart from disciplining the lifestyle, as far as diet is concerned, in India, we are particularly great among the salt eaters. I mean, we love salt in any and everything apart from spices. Now, salt basically is detrimental to the fast recovery of ischemic heart disease patients as well as hypertension. So, we try to reduce salt in the diet. Secondly, we replace the common salt with potassium chloride, rock salt. And that is one part. And second part, different parts of India have got different basic cooking oil. Like in West, we have got olive oil, probably universal. But in India, we don't use olive oil. All sorts of oils are available, and people can have peanut oil and can have any and everything.
So we're talking right now about two things that impact the nutrition, the health of the well-being of the individual. One is salt, and the other is the oils or fats that we eat. Salt is detrimental to the fast recovery for the person with hypertension. Or what about eating salt in your diet even before you've begun the long road to damaging the heart? I have been reading a number of things like Himalayan salt, Celtic salt, natural salts with the many, many minerals in it are required for heart health.
Agreed, but then see, it depends on the geography where you are living. I mean, certain salts have got less of iodine. For example, in India, the salt is less iodine, so we have artificially iodinated salt. Likewise, in different parts of the world, different places, geography, the salt changes. Now, excess of salt is detrimental. I don't say salt is basically detrimental, but using excess of salt, excess of sugar, that is detrimental to the fast recovery of ischemic heart disease.
Okay.
And that is one of the basic things one needs to understand while dealing with ischemic heart disease patients, because many patients come and say that we have been eating salt, I mean, this level of salt since childhood, how do we suddenly change?
So what do you tell them? How do you get them to change? Because the prepared processed foods must have a lot of salt in them. So are the people in India eating out in restaurants mostly, or do they cook at home?
No, they, many people cook at home, and so yes, once a week, yeah, restaurants are there. But then once you are affected with a heart disease, once you've got a heart attack, you automatically come down, I mean, close down and start having meals at your home, home-cooked meals. But what we were talking about, so we tell them that instead of common salt, use half common salt and mix it with rock salt. Rock salt is potassium chloride, and potassium is very good for the heart. Secondly, potassium and insulin go hand in hand. And insulin is a hormone which also controls fat metabolism other than carbohydrate metabolism. And hyperinsulinemia typically also leads to hyperhomocysteinemia as well as metabolic disorders like hypertension and diabetes and ischemic heart disease.
Okay, so this last couple of sentences that you said is a little bit fuzzy coming into me, and I'm not sure that I was clear on what you said. So maybe you could repeat again that you tell the folks to mix the common salt that's used with half of rock salt, potassium chloride, and is that readily available? And then you said that this hormone, what hormone controls the fat?
Insulin. Potassium insulin. And insulin go hand in hand.
Okay.
And so, insulin is also a governor. I mean, it governs fat metabolism as it governs carbohydrate metabolism.
Okay.
So once you have got good amount of potassium and less amount of sodium going inside the constitution, it becomes easy for the medicines to work, the constitutional medicines to work, and the process of reversal atherosclerosis to take place, it becomes much easier.
Okay, so do you tell them certain foods? Because doesn't something like a banana have a higher level of potassium?
Well, again, it depends. I mean, for past, at our center particularly in India, we are following something called as blood group diets. Depending upon your own blood group, for example, if you're B positive or O positive. So O positive people do not do well with milk. I'm giving an example. Whereas B positive people do very well with milk. So depending upon your diet, we can curtail down much of your things which are detrimental depending upon blood group. So we, for 4 to 5 years, we have been following this blood group diet, and it has paid rich dividends. Earlier, the concept was, for example, in diabetes, you stop sugar or lessen sugar so that your diabetes sugar blood sugar stays stable. But now this concept is abolished, particularly in India, and we have been following blood group diets, and to a very great extent it has been helping us.
That's amazing. That's something that people here need to learn about. I know that they do have Eat for Your Blood Type, which is a very well-known information in books that are written here in America, but I am not too familiar with it, so that you're saying the B plus blood type can eat milk, where the O plus do not metabolize the milk very well. And maybe that is natural for those people who are lactose intolerant. I mean, is that just the body signaling them and telling them that they cannot?
Exactly. Yes, the body gives you signals in many, many ways. It is for the individual and as well as the physician to understand the signal and interpret it correctly. So,
okay.
And secondly, for example, red meat. Red meat is detrimental to, it is a fat-building meat. But then chicken, which is a white meat or lean meat, is not allowed for B-positive people, whereas red meat is freely allowed for O-positive people. I'm just giving an example. So just now, see the change of perception.
Okay, so I'm listening to this, and I'm just thinking on a personal level for a moment. I'm thinking about people in the family, and people in the family, husband and wife, parents and kids, they may have different blood types. And so now we have to be preparing different types of food for the people in the family. Maybe I'm taking this a little bit off topic, but it sounds kind of interesting that now how are you going to manage your preparation of food for the family?
No, eventually, as far as we see, generally children have the same blood types as one of the parents. So either your father or the mother blood type is in you. Luckily, I mean, that's in nearly 70-80% of cases. So you not necessarily need to prepare food specifically for different people. So, in India, we have got joint family system still prevailing. I mean, right from the grandparents to the grandchildren, all are in one single household.
Okay, so, this is really fascinating.
Yeah, and the trend still continues, and it is probably a very good trend because the family support system, the family value system is to a great deal maintained. But then as far as diet is concerned, yes, to a certain extent, we tell the patients that what is detrimental as far as your blood group, don't take them. But then you can't keep on preparing different diets for different people in the family if you have to live as a family as a whole.
I'm still a little bit wondering how, if, let's say, one of the people in the family cannot take the milk products, the dairy products, and the rest of the family can, then there needs to be something available for them.
It is available. I mean, so there's choice options are open, and you have to give options. See, whenever we advise diet, it should not be according to the paper. It should be according to the person. It should be compatible with the person, and the person should be able to follow it. Many multi-specialty hospitals, they have got good dietitians and they prepare charts. But then at the patient level, at the grassroots level, what we see, they follow it for 1 month, 2 months, and 3 months, and then after 3 months, that diet goes flop because they can't follow it. What we actually, we make the patient the party. The patient has to get well. It is not we who are making the patient well. We are just helping him or her to get well. For that, if the diet needs to be changed, yes, fine, then you should do it.
Okay, so, we only have a few minutes left, about 5 minutes left to the show. It's gone very, very quickly simply because we had technical difficulties, but we did cover a lot of ground here today. It's amazing, and I look forward to so much more. Is there something, any other tip or hint that you want to talk about heart health today for the listeners?
Yeah, very, very important thing. Now, whenever we do an angiogram, the doctors doing the angiogram definitely focus on this X percentage of blockage, 70% of blockage, 80% of blockage in this artery and that artery, but they hardly ever talk about the collateral circulation, which is a natural bypass system which nature creates. Whenever there's a blockage in the entire, any system, any artery, there is bound to be a bypass created naturally, which can be very well seen in a particular angiogram. Now, many people don't know about this, and they get so fed up, so upset about the blockages, that they don't see the good part that there is a bypass developing near the blockage. And neither doctors, the cardiologists who do an angiogram focus on those parts. Luckily, in homeopathy, we have got medicines which can increase that natural bypass, that is called collateral circulation, and thereby help the patient to regain the strength of the heart back to normal. So that is one thing which I really want my listeners to listen.
That's amazing. So you're saying that using homeopathic remedies will help develop these natural bypass arteries for the heart? And the question is, do you have a protocol or specific remedies for that, or is it based only on the constitution of the individual?
No. Apart from the constitution, we do have a protocol and we do have specific medications because we need to develop it over a period of time. Not all medicines have that kind of activity in homeopathy. There are certain medications like, for that matter, Spigelia, Glonine, Aurum Met, Phosphorus. These are certain medications, and how to use them would be, it's a skill by itself. But these medicines have the propensity to increase natural bypass, to speed up natural bypass, because on an average, a natural bypass takes about a year or so to strengthen itself. So homeopathic medicines, even if it can't dissolve a blockage, if it can't dissolve an atherosclerotic plaque, but at least it can increase a natural bypass, increase work efficiency of the heart, and I think that's what is required. So please don't get upset whenever you have got a heart blockages. Calm down, go to homeopath, discuss with him or her if he or she has got medications which can increase natural bypass. Your work is done. If this message goes out, I think it's a positive message what homeopathy can contribute for patients of ischemic heart disease.
That would be wonderful. And can they we only have 1 minute left. Do you say that they can use these homeopathic remedies in addition to their traditional drugs?
Yes, definitely. There are many patients who can't suddenly stop. For example, a diabetic cannot suddenly stop an insulin. So what? We can still use homeopathic medicines along with those medicines for a period of time, gradually decrease those allopathic drugs, increase the dosage of homeopathy, and can convert fully homeopathy for a particular period of time. I think that is what homeopathy has to offer today for the modern man in the 21st century.
I would like to remind everyone that this is a simple study session, these radio shows, and you should always consult your healthcare provider.
Well, we have so much to learn from you, and I'm thrilled that we were able to make this long-distance connection. I'm sure that the rest of the folks are going to want to hear a lot more from you and learn about taking care of their heart health, and not only their lifestyle, but also the fact that homeopathy has so much to offer to the medical world. And I do believe we're making this great shift by sending out this message to the world. Let's share it with everybody we know. Become a follower on Blog Talk Radio. Become a friend of Homeopathy World Community on Facebook, and let other people know so that we can learn more together.
Yes, thank you very much. And I hope next time such technical errors will not take place. Beforehand, we'll be, well in place so that we have full 30 minutes and much, much more to discuss. I can have many questions. I am having questions. Doctor, can you suggest medicine for stroke or some medicine help in both heart attacks and stroke? From Mr. Abra.
Okay. So I'm going to send us off today.
Okay. Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy with co-hosts Dr. Adel Jim Salawala and Debbie Brock on Homeopathy World Community Radio.